Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hello everyone, it's Jesse Green here. Welcome back to SavvyDentist.com and to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. It is fantastic to have you company for another episode of the show. Now, many of you have heard the news, and the big news, of course, is that we have recently launched the sister publication to this podcast, which is called the Savvy Dentist Magazine. The magazine, like the podcast, is based on the notion that some of the best ideas for us as practice owners come from outside the profession. So in the magazine, you're going to see articles from well-known business people outside dentistry, but also you're going to see a whole bunch of articles from specific advisors to the dental profession, whether that be accountants, lawyers, HR, and personnel management, IT management, marketing, property, fit-out companies, and the whole gamut. So the whole magazine is designed to help you create a practice and a life that you really love. I really believe that as practice owners, we've got to increase our business knowledge because the market is changing, the needs of the practice owner are becoming more sophisticated, and I really hope that this magazine is going to be a useful tool for you. So all you need to do is to head across to SavvyDentist.com, have a look at the magazine tab and subscribe. It's totally free. Whether you want the print version or the digital version, it's free either which way. And we'd love to give you that as a resource to help you on your journey to the success that you're aiming to achieve. Now, one of the things I've been thinking about is the changing marketplace, and change seems to be happening at a pretty brisk rate at the moment. We're seeing lots of different changes on the technological front, the social front, even the workplace front as well, and it feels sometimes like the rate of change is really increasing. And so today I'm joined by Lata Hamilton, and Lata is a change management expert, and you can find her at passionpioneers.com.au, and she's well known, well regarded as helping people navigate change and bring organizations through that change management process. So Lata, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
I'm really glad you're here too, and I wanted to start with change because is it my perception that change is happening more rapidly, or is it just perhaps we're more aware of change? What's the situation? Is it really a changing environment as much as we feel it is?
Yeah, you're not going crazy. Dr. Jesse, you're not going crazy at all. It truly is. The pace of change is absolutely rapidly increasing. You know, if we kind of think back over the last couple of years, obviously with the COVID pandemic, that was probably an unprecedented level of change that was forced upon us. And it was almost like, if we think about like why that was such a big scale of change, it was because the world's so globalized now that it didn't just stop at like a country border or like, you know, to a particular region or things like that, that it really did kind of go across the entire globe and really kind of put a pause on everything. And so that's just probably one of the examples of like the fact that there's this exponential growth in how connected our world is. So changes that are coming out from one place can spread really fast and really wide really quickly. And those changes are just becoming more and more constant. You know, we've got an ever-increasing population. I think we've just passed 8 billion people in the world. We've got much higher levels of tertiary education and innovation and creativity, technological advancement. And so the changes that are actually coming to people, to the general population, to our society, and to our businesses and workplaces, it is faster. The pace is more rapid. Now, by the time you've selected a system, you know, scoped it all out, built it, and then delivered it into an organization, you could already be behind the eight ball by the time you've done that. So systems that used to be able to serve us for 10, 20, maybe even 30 years, and some organizations might still be using some of those really old legacy systems. Now they might only serve you for 2 years before a better option comes down the line.
It's really interesting. And I wanted to ask you about coping with that rapid change because, you know, sometimes it feels like we're on a bit of a merry-go-round. And I don't know about other people, but sometimes I would just love the ride to slow down enough to keep up with it. And it feels sometimes a little bit overwhelming because there's change coming on all different fronts, whether it's the technological change, which you've just alluded to, and, you know, goodness me, you know, this time a year ago, we weren't even talking about ChatGPT, and that's kind of everywhere now. And that's going to become, you know, more and more, you know, I guess, prevalent in its application. But there's not just the technological changes, there's generational changes, there's social changes, there's a whole bunch of different things. So I wanted to ask you about why do we feel so overwhelmed? What is it? What's happening with our physiology or our brain waves that makes us feel a little bit like there's too much stimulus coming at us all at once?
Yeah, I think it's because there is too much stimulus coming to us all at once. I mean, if you think about, you know, even just like digital technology, that's only been around for what, sort of like 100 years, maybe, if that, maybe even not that really, like if we're thinking about like radios and televisions and things, as well as the internet and computers. So, you know, in terms of how we perceive change generally, humans are hardwired not to like change. They're hardwired to resist change simply because, you know, if things stay the same, then we feel safe, we feel secure, we can plan for the future, we know our place in society, we know our place in the world, in a team, in a family, like wherever, in our social setting. We can survive and just keep going forward because we know how to do things, and there's this regular rhythm and regularity to how things work. So when change comes knocking on our door, which is inevitable, but it is speeding up, when change comes knocking on our door, it kind of throws all of that up into the air. It makes us feel really anxious, I guess, and stressed and concerned about, like, what is this going to mean for me? What am I going to lose from this? How is this going to make me look if I can't pick it up in time or if I can't adjust? Will people leave me behind? Will I be able to do the things that I used to be able to do? And so all of that kind of processing and programming kind of from a psychological perspective comes up. Then the pace of change is simply that often we just don't have the capacity to be able to absorb the changes that are coming down the line or the changes that are happening in our world and our workplaces at that constant speed. It's like by the time we've grasped one thing, like something else has changed along the way. But then also with that overwhelm, like there is something to be said, I think, for technology generally and that filling our lives and our days and that constant stimulation from, you know, social media feeds and from breaking news that isn't breaking, it was breaking 5 days ago.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like, it's still breaking.
Yeah.
I did journalism at university.
Can we call it broken news? Because that's who it really is, kind of broken news, isn't it?
It's like how many, like, and then like you go on and it's like you look for the update and it's like one sentence that says that there's no more updates.
Yeah.
Like it's just like, it's very kind of like this constantly trying to get eyeballs, constantly trying to get attention. And that just leaves us fatigued through the day. So even without change, just the constant communication stimulation leaves us fatigued. Then we go to put change on top of that. I love to define things really simply. If we're talking about sort of like personal change, it's just anything that can be changing in your life or your personal life. If we're talking about workplace change, you know, I kind of define things really simply. It's moving people from doing things in one way to doing things in another way or a new way. And we do that through communications, training, and business readiness. And it can be a new system, a new process, a new application, a new platform, a new team structure. It could be moving sites. It could be, you know, the move to remote work, the move back to the office. It could be regulatory and compliance change. So imagine like you're going about your day to day and then you're constantly being stimulated. So you're already feeling overwhelmed and fatigued. And then on top of that, you're either experiencing major life changes, which, you know, can happen to any and all of us. We will all experience major life changes. And then within our world and our workplaces and our career, we're experiencing these sort of bigger workplace changes, even really simple changes. Like you might just be wanting to change like the process for a patient, for example, just one part of the process. You want to validate this piece of information with them when you go to onboard them into your clinic, for example. That seems so small and so simple. But you've got to remember that it's in the context of a person or a team who was already overwhelmed, already fatigued, already overstimulated, is probably going through personal change in their personal life. And then you're bringing them this extra thing that they have to do and it changes what they've been doing for the last 5 years, day in, day out. And that's where, you know, it's like that kind of like the tipping point. It's like the straw that broke the camel's back? It's like, suddenly there's this like, what's the word, unrealistic or disproportionate reaction to workplace change, even when it's something really small that should just be a simple, we're just changing this over to this. But it's because it's in the wider context of change generally.
It's really interesting. And I think that you've touched on a couple of interesting points. I wanted to ask you a question because I'm curious to understand how we relate to change that we choose versus change that's imposed upon us. And I mean, obviously, the superficial level, we can say that, you know, change that we choose should be easier to deal with rather than change that's imposed. But do we still encounter that sense of overwhelm even if we're choosing that change, or is it just something that we can seem to make peace with a little more easily?
We can make peace with it probably a little more easily. But I think that no matter what change it is, every individual needs to make a decision. Mm. They need to make a decision that they want this change and that they're on board with it and that they're going to commit to it and do whatever that they need to follow through on it. So even in our own personal life, we often see those experiences or those times where you might know that something is bad for you. You might know that you need to change for your own personal well-being. You've known it for a long time. Maybe it's taken you a bit of time to actually take some action around it. Even when you make a decision, it doesn't mean that there's not fear. It doesn't mean that there's not mourning. It doesn't mean that there's not a sense of loss or a sense of failure or, you know, like those sorts of same emotions. There is a level of empowerment, though, when you make your own changes. And that's why, kind of within workplaces, why it is so critical to help your team or your employees to feel empowered around change. Because no matter whether or not the change is coming from them or outside, like there'll still be a lot of reaction to change, but you can absolutely start helping people feel like they've got a bit more control, helping them feel a little bit more empowered. And that can kind of help to minimize a little bit of that reaction or that resistance.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about that because I think, you know, I want to just touch on the concept of agency for a moment and the importance and the role of agency, even in a workplace where you may be the employee and maybe you're not the decision maker. Mm-hmm. But how do you create a sense of agency for individuals in your team as the practice owner so that they can perhaps cope with that change a little bit better, but knowing also that the change needs to happen for the good of the business or for the good of whatever? Because I guess if I'm picking up what you're putting down, what I understand is that if people don't feel like they've got a say in it, if they don't feel like they are agreeing to it and they're okay with it, then A, they're probably going to feel some sort of psychological distress. But equally, perhaps resist that change, which we know is going to be for the betterment of the business, the patient, or whatever it happens to be. So in a practical sense, how does a business owner create agency and buy-in for that team member when in actual fact they're not the decision maker?
Yeah, it's pretty much like no matter what industry or workplace you're in, this is the big sort of million-dollar question. And there's some things that sort of you do before the change, and then there's things that you can do like sort of during the change. Mm. So what I would say is like, don't wait for a major change. Say you're putting in a major new system to manage your work in the team and the workflows. So say you're putting in a major new system, and it's like that's when you decide to start focusing on this.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, oh, I guess we better kind of like think about change and like have a bit of a change management approach and try and engage and empower our team. It's like when you wait for those big changes, like you've already lost so much time and you've already lost so much trust. So it really is about building that culture beforehand, building that culture of communication. Especially if you are a practice owner or somebody in charge or somebody in a position of leadership or authority, is having that open communication, sharing appropriately to people about all things, not just when change is in front of you, mm-hmm. but it could be really simple things. Like it could be like, yep, you know, like this regulation has been passed down from the government, or, you know, this is something new that's happening in technology, or this is something that we're having to do for the business. And you don't have to go into like necessarily like anything that's confidential or that's inappropriate to share with those team members, but it's about having that level of sort of transparency and that communication so that when change comes, it's not like suddenly we're getting all of this extra communication that we've never really been brought into the circle or brought into the loop before. So that's kind of one thing. And then the other thing is to have those channels of feedback already set up. So, you know, do you have regular one-on-ones with your people? Do you have the opportunity for people to submit ideas? When something goes to change, like can you run a workshop with the people who do that process day in, day out and actually understand from them what they're currently doing and what's not working in that current process? And that might drive a bit of appetite for the new way of doing things. And then you might also learn, and you probably will, you might learn what what could actually be better about it, about the new way that we do it? Can we actually make some shifts and changes and tweaks based on what people are saying? So that real co-creation and co-design is where I see a lot of empowerment. And you don't have to wait for change to do that. You can absolutely be co-creating and co-designing with your team along the way. Then they have that sense of agency. They have that sense of ownership. Because sometimes as a business owner, like I'm a business owner myself now, it can feel like everything is resting on our shoulders. Mm. It can feel like we are the ones that have to make all the decisions and all of the tough choices. And we have to wear the burden and wear the load for everybody who works with us and for us, or our customers, clients, community, students. For example, like yesterday, I was working with my assistant. We're planning out some promotional periods and some launches and things like that. And I said to her, I'm like, I'm really struggling to figure out if we should do it this way or we should do it that way. And we had an open conversation about that. Like ultimately it's my choice, but I brought her into the conversation and I said, here are the pros of doing it this way. Here is why I think we could do it this way. What do you think about it? You know, like, is there anything that I haven't been thinking, like that I've sort of missed? And we went back and forth. We literally like... the most indecisive pair. So we went back and forth. And then finally we decided on one course of action. She went to go start putting it into place. And then she was like, this is too hard. And we were like, great. Now we know for certain together that this is the right course of action. So it was almost this level of like us getting to that point of comfort and confidence in what our decision was. But also because both of us are going to be delivering against that, we both were on the journey of making that decision and we were able to make it together and then actually go, yep, this is the right thing. And sort of now we'll work better, you know, on that project.
Yeah, it's really interesting, isn't it? And I think that that's a really key point, and that is involving your people in the decision-making process and letting keeping them abreast of that. And as you said, not waiting for the big decisions to be made. And just, I guess, building that into the organizational culture, building that into day-to-day business, not just waiting for these, you know, momentous events to say, hey, guess what? Yeah, here it is.
Yeah, it can seem a bit like lip service if you wait until the big events.
Yeah.
Whereas if you build it in and it becomes a regular rhythm and a regular culture, then people will believe it when there's a big event that you do want their feedback and input.
What if you actually don't really want their input in the first place? Can I just say that out loud? Because I'm sure someone here is thinking, going... oh, team empowerment, please, can you please just do what I ask you to do? There's going to be someone listening to this podcast going, why can't they just do what I say? And yeah. I want to just address that because I'm sure it's a thought rattling around someone's brain.
Yeah. All I'm going to say is gone are the days where command and control is the way that people will engage and respond with you and with change. We don't live in that kind of society anymore. I think, you know, back sort of in the industrial era and even probably up until maybe about 50 years ago, you could just use your authority to make people fall in line. You absolutely could. Whether they liked it or not, they were going to fall in line. And like from a social perspective, we've changed. And so the expectations of everybody, including, you know, younger generations, the expectations is that you will be taken on a journey, you will be engaged, that you will have a say and you will have a seat at the table where appropriate. So I would always caveat that with where appropriate. You do not need to include your team on, you know, major financial decisions about your business, but you might include them on, like, you know, if there's things that are going to impact them down the track about it, you might start to seed or open the conversations up. So it's kind of like, if you're thinking that way, like something from a change management perspective is we absolutely have this focus on people. We have this focus on wanting to create and maximize the people experience and make it as engaging and get as many people on board and bought into the change, have them feel empowered, have them feel engaged, have them inspired and believing in the change. And it sounds very fluffy, but the truth is the only reason really that we're wanting to do that is because we want to get the results.
Yeah.
Like if we're going to spend this money and put this time and effort and energy into putting in this new system or this new process, we want people to actually use the system. We've just invested in it. We want them to use the system and we want them to follow the process. So it's actually why we do change, is to realize the business benefits. We want to actually make sure that people are going to use it now and into the future, that they're not going to, you know, roll back, or they're not going to, you know, find workarounds and be sneaky about it and things like that to avoid having to use it. So the long-term, like, the long-term reason why you do, why you follow change management approach, or why you bring change leadership into your, into your own business leadership, is really so that you can actually get the return on investment for whatever it is that you're investing in. Because people are at the heart of your business. They are the ones that are doing the work. They are the ones that are serving your patients, serving your clients, serving your customers. And so because your business is reliant on people, even if you have a very, you know, digitized or technologically savvy business, there's still going to be people involved. People are often where you can make or break the change, because they have that resistance. And because you are dependent and reliant on them, that's where you can literally like have systems that get implemented and nobody likes them, nobody uses them, and you have to go and redo it a few, like, you know, a year or two later. So it really is about that long-term view.
Yeah, I think you've touched on something really important, because one of my favorite mantras is the only truth is the result. And if the business needs to make a change because presumably they're making that change with an objective in mind, they're not just doing change for the sake of change, although I do see some of that sometimes, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, if we keep the objective front of mind and we want to get that ROI, whether it's a new system, new technological piece of equipment, you know, whatever it happens to be, we need people using it, and therefore we've got to, you know, work the way that we need to work to get the outcome. And so I think for me, one of the things that I've always tried to do, it's sometimes successfully and sometimes less so, but to try and be a bit more flexible in the approach, because I think dogma of any kind is going to probably slow people down. Yeah, if you clear where you want to go, you've just got to be able to navigate that path. And that does mean bringing people with you. And that means we need to adapt our own styles to suit and to get that outcome. If someone wants me to dress up in a purple suit and pretend to be Willy Wonka to get the change I need to get, I'll bloody do it. I don't care. As long as I get the change I want and the objective I want. Yeah, if that's
I'd love to see that.
Yeah, I don't think anyone really needs to see that. But
as long as you do the dancing and singing at the same time.
Yeah, well, I was going to bring up your rap, but anyway, I'll save that for another time. I did see that.
It was really good. It was good. Fun, isn't it?
It was good.
But I love what you're saying. And what I would really say here as well is, like, I often love to say, like, calibrate on hope, not fear. Because fear will burn people out. And you want a high performing team after the change. You want a vibrant, energized, positive, optimistic, high performing team after the change, not one that's completely burnt out or that feels completely disempowered, disengaged, and is looking at new jobs and, like, you know, wanting to leave the organization. So it's like, if you calibrate on hope, you kind of, as hard as the change is and as challenging as it is and how much resistance is there, like, truly you will have more energy and sustain that change after you've made it. And that's why it's worth probably bringing people on the journey, as you mentioned. It's worth taking that time, that effort, that energy, that care and compassion, because it's worth it in the short term and the long term.
Yeah, I, there's a couple of thoughts that I have going on through there. And I wanted to ask you whether you find some business leaders able to cope with change better than others. And I guess let me ask the question more directly. Do you find that as people get older, they don't cope as well with change as they did when they're younger? I want to ask if there's any, I suppose, resistance that creeps in as you get older.
I don't know. My dad's a baby boomer and I swear he has more tech than I do.
But, well, maybe so. But
he's pretty good at jumping on board.
Is he resistant in other ways as well or not?
Yeah, probably. He probably is. But yeah, on the tech front, it's really funny. He's very much on board. Like, he'll have like a trackpad before me, and I've still never owned an iPad, but he's had one. And what I would say is, it's like, it's kind of almost like probably as you get older, you pick and choose what you actually want to jump on board with. So even for me, like, I'm a change manager, ChatGPT came out and everybody was talking about it. And I was seriously just sitting there thinking to myself, I'm like, this just seems very, a bit of a trend. It seems like a bit of a hype. Like, I'm like, let me let the dust settle and then make a decision. Like, let me not be at the bleeding edge of this. Let me be at the leading edge of it. And so I kind of just sat back a little bit, and I think that's probably what older generations tend to do. I'm a millennial, so I'm not one of the older generations, but I'm probably getting there where I'm like, oh, God, kids today.
Yeah. Well, millennials are turning 40 now, so welcome. Welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I'm not suggesting you're 40. I know you're not there yet, but I read some stats out that millennials are turning 40. Can you believe it?
Yeah. And we're starting to have families and things like that. So we're starting to kind of like fall into some of those more, stable and traditional structures that probably the generations before us are used to. So I think it is really probably just about, like, I don't necessarily think that older generations are resistant to change more. I think it's probably just that they're a bit more cautious about jumping on too soon for things that may not have longevity, or that like, it's like, jump on when it's established so that you don't have to do the hard yards of learning it. And whereas, like, younger people who might like more of that variety, that challenge, or have more time up their sleeve to learn those things, or more desire, I guess, to learn those things, let them work it all out and then leverage them and go and ask them to help, like, coach you or train you on how to do X, Y, Z. Like, they, like, younger generations can be such a like spring of, like, wealth of information and techniques and tools and things like that, as long as you're open to being coached in it or trained in it or getting that information for yourself. So for me, for example, with ChatGPT, like, I started to have students asking me about how we could use ChatGPT in change management. When that sort of started to happen, I sort of thought to myself, I was like, well, I'm going to go and learn, actually. But I decided to learn from a market leader and a real expert in the field, because I was like, instead of dabbling in, like, bits and pieces, I'm going to actually go and properly, like, learn from an expert and a master. So I invested in sort of doing that, and it was more of a time investment than a money investment, because it was in the US. So I was up at like 5. I went to bed at 5 and would wake up at like 11 p.m. or midnight and do like an entire 8 hours, 12 hours for that course. So yeah, so it was pretty intense, but that was kind of where I chose to jump in.
Yeah.
So if you are feeling that you are a bit more resistant, it's like maybe looking into what that is. Like, why is that happening? Why do you feel that way? Like, what are those fears that are coming up? Or is there resentment or frustration? And then use your own common sense and your own intuition around whether or not this is going to be like a blip on the radar and then disappear completely, or whether it's going to be here for the long haul and it's worth, you know, taking the time, investing, and potentially even leveraging some of your own people around you to help you learn and get on board with that change.
Yeah, and what I'm hearing there is growth mindset versus fixed mindset, and maintaining that growth mindset usually would mean you're hopefully a bit more open to those changes. But I think you're right, picking and choosing the things you want to get on board with and when you want to get on board with them is really interesting. It's going to be only a matter of a week or two, I think, before we have people marketing themselves as Threads experts. We're recording this a week or two after Threads has been launched. And so it won't be long before there's, you know, some course on how to use Threads, I'm sure. But
anyway. I've still never been on Twitter. Like, I just couldn't be bothered, right? Like, I was like, nah, not for me. And I've still never been on Twitter. It's like, you know, been there for however long. But, like, I just chose, like, you can choose actively, but make it an active choice. Don't let it be your fear and resistance that's causing you to not want to do something or get on board with something. Let it be an active choice that you make and have reasons why. And then that's fine. Like, and no choice is set in stone, right? Like, you can always come on when it's more established, when you're confident in it or the solution or the platform or whatever, and you have the appetite, capacity, and desire to want to learn it.
Yeah, and there's if you're in a business sense, what's the purpose of it for you? Does it fit your strategy and so on? I wanted to ask you about generational change because I'm Gen X, you're millennial, my kids are, I suppose, they're Gen Z, so they're late teens. And what's really interesting is noticing attitudinal changes, social changes from one generation to the next. And I think, you know, there's, I don't want to kind of get into the specifics of all of those changes because otherwise it'll probably potentially trigger some people. I don't want to have a podcast that triggers people. But what's really interesting is the beliefs that younger generations grow up with and how they're being imported into the workplace as well. And I think for people who are an older generation who grew up with a different set of beliefs and grew up with a different set of, not necessarily values, but different set of circumstances and perspective on the world. And of course, the world is shifting. I wanted to talk about how generations can work harmoniously together, because I think, you know, older generations, probably since time began, have been complaining about the generations younger than them. And I'm sure the younger generations since time began have been complaining about the generations older than them. So I wanted to talk a little bit about managing those different and shifting perspectives in the workplace from one generation to the next, because, you know, my kids have different outlooks to my outlook, and that's okay. But how do you manage that in the workplace?
Yeah, there's so many generations. I think we're kind of like now sitting at sort of like five generations almost entering the workplace at once, or being in the workplace at once. And if we think about kind of like baby boomers, because they're living longer, modern medicine, quality of life, technology, like technological advances as well, they're living longer. So they're actually staying in the workforce longer. So back when you were probably entering the workforce, more of those more of the people who were sort of the baby boomer age now would have already probably been starting to retire. Whereas a lot of baby boomers, and there's even been some research more recently that's come out where it's like baby boomers want to stay relevant. They want to stay active. They want to keep working and stay in industry, and which is great for them. But what it's doing from the pipeline perspective is it's kind of jamming the pipeline up a little bit, because then you have like Gen X who aren't getting into like board positions, CEO positions, C-suite positions and things like that. And this is workplaces more holistically and the industry more holistically. So it's kind of jamming that up. And then you've got these generations, as you rightly said, like Gen Z, millennials, like my generation, where we're super ambitious. We got told, like when we were growing up by our baby boom parents, and at university and like all through our kind of like younger years, we're like, you can be anything that you want. You can have anything that you want. You can have it all. You know, like the world is your oyster. And that's what we got told. We have this real positive, optimistic and confident outlook of what's possible. But we are going into workplaces where the generations that are there have done their time. When they entered the workforce, it was a slower career progression. There was upward mobility and movement, though, because, you know, people would move out more frequently of the industry and then people would move up. So now we're kind of getting in and we're like, well, where are our leadership positions? And maybe there's a little bit of like overambition and overconfidence. Like I definitely felt a little constrained and stuck by, like I did a graduate program, so I was being taught how to be a leader. And then when I came off the graduate program, I'm like, great, I'm ready. And it was like, no, you've still got to do your time, because there was nowhere to go. There was nowhere for me to move. So it wasn't necessarily like those managers' fault. Like these were mostly Gen X managers. It wasn't their fault. It was just like there wasn't that mobility within the workplace for me to move. So what I did actually was I went a completely different route. I wanted more pay and I wanted more variety and more challenge, and I wanted to lead. At that point, I thought that leadership just meant, you know, being a manager, being a people leader, having direct reports. But actually what I ended up doing was going into the project space, and projects are short, sharp pieces of work. So I would have that variety and I'd have that challenge constantly moving every few months to new projects or like I've worked in many different workplaces for many different clients, because projects have a defined start and end date. And so I loved that. Plus it pays more because it's like day rate contracting, contingent work. So I got that. So I simply looked at it in a different way. And then the leadership aspect, I've worked on changes that have impacted over 100,000 people. Like I've worked in some of Australia's biggest companies, massive like national and global changes. I've got leadership impact, even though I've never been a leader, even though I've never been a people manager. So I got that box ticked as well. So sometimes I think that there's this expectation of the younger generations that there's this one course and one path, without realizing there's multiple ways of getting those needs met and served. There's multiple ways of feeling fulfilled, feeling valued, feeling respected, being given the opportunity to grow and learn. It's not just about climbing the ladder or I guess kind of like being put into a position that hands you those things. So I still had to earn, in a certain way, I still had to earn doing that, but I had to earn it through a different way. So rather than earning it through time, I earned it through like diversion, almost like going a different path, a different route, which gave me different experiences and essentially got me to the same place.
Yeah. It's really interesting. I mean, as I mentioned a moment ago, I'm Gen X, and certainly I remember very, very clearly when I graduated, there was a pathway. I actually had my first job out of university in the Navy, and that was, again, very structured, very delineated pathway. And I remember you like in the Navy at that time, you couldn't be promoted until you'd done 5.5 years at that rank. And it's like, seriously. And it used to just drive me to distraction. Like, if you're good enough, promote, right? And then I remember other people in other government organizations using this equivalency, and you go, but hang on, you don't have to do the 5.5 years before you can be promoted. And I remember being incredibly frustrated by that. So I do think, I guess my reflection and my, I'm digging back into the archives and recesses of my mind a little way.
Dusting off that career memory.
Dusting off. But I do remember as a young person, I like to think of myself still as young, but anyway, a younger person, but having the impatience or the desire to move quickly. And I do think that that comes with a little bit of youth. And I think that's a great thing about being young, because the energy, the drive, the passion is there. I think when you get a little bit older, you still got that, but maybe just perspective shift, life circumstances are different and so on. But one of the things that I guess I've noticed with younger dentists graduating is they're probably like you, they're impatient. And like I was too, they're impatient. They want to progress. They want to see results quickly. And the thing that's really interesting in dentistry, and I this is going to sound contradictory in a second, but there is some skills to master, and it's not just knowledge-based, it's practically-based skills. And so I wanted to get your perspective on creating as fast a pathway as possible, but as safe a pathway as possible as well, so that people don't find themselves in situations that they're not really well equipped for. Because if people, and I think this applies to not just dentistry, but we're using dentistry as our frame of reference. But if you find yourself in situations that you're ill-equipped to handle, that actually I think can set you back rather than just kind of going, oopsie. It can actually, you know, retard progress rather than give you a bit of a life lesson. What's your thoughts on being ambitious and upwardly mobile, but at the same time being thoughtful and considered?
Look, you will have younger generations probably chomping at the bit if they're anything like I was. I'm sure that my managers really probably struggled like with that in my early career. If I kind of reflect back on some things that really helped me and that really kind of served me, what I was looking for at that time, it was very much like I didn't mind starting from a particular place. I wanted to know, though, what that plan was going to look like. Mm. I wanted to know what that path was going to be. I wanted to have clear guidance and clear plan around how I was going to be developed to reach those milestones. So it's like making it really clear why there needs to be that time around sort of developing skills and experience and that practical side from a safety perspective, from a, you know, patient satisfaction perspective, building those skills. But I also wanted to I wanted to be shown how I was going to be able to get there, because just kind of being left in the dark about, well, what do I need to do to progress? Like not having that clarity around, well, okay, I'm happy to start at the starting point, but then like, how do I move up? What are those clear pathways, rhythms, and milestones that I need to meet, and how am I going to get there? So even it might be if you don't, for example, have the time and capacity to coach or to mentor or to support your younger dentists or your newer dentists in their profession, it might be about how can you put them on more of a practical course. So maybe they went to university to learn the theory and, you know, all of that sort of stuff. And obviously they would have done some practical there too, but how can they go and do more practical courses to learn some of those skills? Or how can you maybe set them up with an industry mentor? And you might have to pay a little bit in some cases, even to invest a little bit for that. But if you can show them that you're committed to their future and that there is that clear path, then they'll be more likely to be like, yep, cool. I'm happy to kind of like go it a bit slower. Mm. And then another thing I think as well is sometimes it is about finding those rare gems and giving them the opportunities. Mm. So there will be great performers, and sometimes you might just need to kind of like separate the wheat from the chaff and see who's just talking a big talk versus who's actually really got that care, got that compassion, got that skill level, got that diligence behind them, and then giving them some opportunities, you know, again, when appropriate and at the appropriate pace, giving them some opportunities. Like when I moved to change management, I had no experience in change at all. But my hiring manager was, she could see that I had the attitude there. She could see that I was really committed, that I had a great track record behind me. And she gave me that opportunity. And I'm forever grateful to her for that, because she, you know, opened me up to a path and a profession that I love, absolutely love. And I've really been able to shine in and use all of my transferable skills in. But she believed in me and gave me that opportunity. And then other leaders that I've had have handed me on to like major projects, like huge projects as my first project with them. But again, it's because I had that track record behind me, and then I had the attitude and I had that energy. And so it was almost like, you know, was able to kind of step into those and really make it my own. So it is probably about hiring smarter as well, and hiring around attitude and energy, not just like what people are saying or like what's on a page. Actually really tap into the more of that intuitive side around like, is this person going to really be a high performer and deliver well, work well with other people, and provide a great like patient experience.
Lada, from an intergenerational point of view, that makes perfect sense. We've got to be able to learn to work together, because I think ultimately we're all young ones. And I think for the older generation listening to this podcast, we've got to go back and remember that we were just like the younger generation today. We were ambitious. We were energetic. We were driven. We were impatient. And yes, circumstances have changed. But I think if we can embrace that energy of youth, provide the structures for them to flourish and to grow, then actually we're going to get the best out of them, and they're going to get the best out of us. And of course, it may mean that we can't provide an endless career path for them all the way from ground zero to the very top of the tree. But again, if we've got them in our organization for a period of time, then hopefully, or my hope is that they leave our organization, if they're going to leave, better equipped for the next job. And I think that if we can do that, then that's fantastic. I've always held the belief, Lada, that part of our responsibility as business owners is to almost see ourselves as a training institution for whatever role that may be. And I think if we can master that, then I think we're on the right path. Do you have any thoughts about training and roles and all those sorts of things? Do you subscribe to that point of view about being a training institution?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think whether I'm working with clients and their organizations, or my own students or my own team members and things like that, I'm always trying to leave people more empowered than when I came. And I kind of think of myself as almost like sharing my gifts and sharing my tools and sharing what I do, so that more people can do what I do the way that I do it. Because the way that I approach change and change leadership is really different, really unique, very creative, very innovative, and it gets really great results. So if I can help more people do that, it's almost like I can have a bigger impact. If I can teach people how to do what I do, it's like I can have a bigger impact. More workplaces and more leaders and more teams will have better change experiences. And then overall, holistically, it's going to make everybody's life easier. So there is a level of like leaving that legacy in the industry and actually starting to think of things from a bit of a macro perspective and that broader big picture perspective around the impact that you can make, and about how we all have the power within us to create and shape the industry that we want. And like I remember saying that to like my own partner. He's in the legal industry, which is a very kind of like traditional industry. And I was like, you are the younger generation. You can shape how you want. You're the one starting to make the decisions and being that decision maker. So if you are a decision maker in your own workplace, in your own industry, we each and every one of us create the industry that we want to exist in. And we can pave the way for people behind us or people that are coming up after us to carry that legacy on into the future.
Ladies and gents, if you're thinking about change in your practice, and I think we all need to be thinking about change, because there's so many different avenues for our businesses to change, whether it's technology, whether it's generational, social changes, or anything in between, then I'm going to really encourage you to head across to Lada's website. And of course, yeah, grab a hold of all the resources there. And the website, of course, is passionpioneers.com.au. And I'd really encourage you to check out Lada's work. So Lada, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.